From the executive producers of The Amanda Show and the network that brought you Tarzan comes 13 episodes of television that, swear to God, changed my life.
Marin's little girl is all grown up. She's running on the streets and beating people up. They were on TV, but they didn't stay. So let's talk now about Birds of Prey.
Welcome to Broken Wings, the unofficial Birds of Prey commentary podcast. My name is Matt Truex, and boy, do I have a show for you today. Now, of course, I like talking to myself, I like talking to my friends, but the main point of this show is to talk to people who are involved with Birds of Prey, whether in front of the camera, behind the camera, sit down with them, and get to know the real story of what went on for that show. And today, we talked to just such a person, an actor who was in the thick of it, actually in the trenches for Birds of Prey, even there for the final siege on the clock tower. He tells the story coming up. But first, just a little housekeeping. Attention, New Gotham, because Broken Wings is on iTunes. You just have to go to iTunes, type in Broken Wings Podcast, subscribe to it once, and then you're golden for the rest of the series. We've got two little comments right now. Thank you very much to whoever wrote those. The rest of you, please keep them coming. I want to see all the comments. I want to read them. I want to absorb them. All the knowledge and feedback you're giving me, I want it. I crave it. So please leave comments on iTunes. Also, Broken Wings, as always, is on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, it's just Broken Wings Podcast, the unofficial Birds of Prey commentary podcast. Find us, like us. I'm posting stuff up there all the time, so just check it out. Also, on Twitter, it's at Broken Wings Pod. I'm tweeting there pretty regularly as well. And of course, you can always check the site, BrokenWingsPodcast.com. But now on to today's guest, our first cast member guest. He needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. He started, of course, you all remember him on 90210 as Student back in the day. Since then, he's had memorable roles. He was Vampire Jape, Cyborg Adam's little lackey on Buffy. He was Richard Code on Felicity for many years. In Waiting, he played Calvin, the guy who had a fear of peeing in public. Notably, these days, he's Chuck Shirley on Supernatural, the man who may or may not be God. Also, a man of many talents, he's frontman for the band Loudon Swain, which we're going to hear about in just a second in our interview. But all those many roles aside, nothing will ever compare in my mind to his work as Gibson Kafka over at No Man's Land in Birds of Prey. The guy who was tending bar all those times, desperately in love with Huntress, who wasn't. He wound up being Harley's lackey at the end of the show. I mean, this guy was in the thick of it. He's in 4 out of 13 episodes, which is pretty good stats, really, for a recurring character. And I got to sit down for a phone interview with the man behind all those roles and more, Robert Patrick Benedict. Very excited to have him on. He was so nice this time. Whether you just know Rob from Birds or any of his other projects, we get to touch on a lot of it, even what his first play was. Quick disclaimer, though, as it was a phone interview, it was one of the few days in the year that it rains in Los Angeles. The quality isn't that great. I did what I could with it. So just bear with it. Turn it up. Best to listen to it on headphones. There are times where we kind of talk over each other just because there's a little delay with the app that I was using to record it all. But it's still pretty great. But without any further ado, let's jump right into my interview with Gibson Kafka himself, Rob Benedict.
Up?
Yep.
Hey, okay, cool. So we're up and rolling now.
Okay, cool.
Obviously, this is a Birds of Prey thing, which I've been a fan of forever. But as a kid, I was like 12 years old and a big Batman fan, so I was the perfect age, you know?
Oh, that's great.
But I thought we'd start a little bit with your past and your history and other jobs and stuff, and then go into Birds of Prey, if that's all right with you.
Great. Yeah, sounds great.
Okay, cool. So you were born in Missouri, right?
Yeah, I was born in Missouri. In Columbia, Missouri, where the University of Missouri is. So it was a college town. It was one of those towns like Austin, Texas, where, you know, in the middle of a state that's fairly conservative, there's this town that's really liberal and gets a lot of art and stuff. And so we, you know, I acted a lot. My parents were involved in community theater, so I acted a lot in community theater.
Oh, see, that was a question I had, whether it was a right away acting thing, if that was your past right away, or if you kind of found it later on or not.
Right. No. Pretty much at a young age. I mean, there's a college there called Stevens College, and I was like 12 years old, and they did a play called The Winslow Boy, and they asked me to play the Winslow Boy, which is the lead in the play, and that was kind of where I got the bug, you know, and really from that age on, that's what I wanted to do.
And what is The Winslow Boy about?
Winslow Boy is it's a British play by Terrence McNally, I want to say. Anyway,
you would know better than I at this point.
They just on Broadway. They just recently revived it, like last year. But it's a boy at a private school gets accused of a crime, but the crime's like stealing something. He didn't kill anybody or anything, but he like stole something and he gets accused of it and he didn't do it. And so it's about, it's not a great pitch, but it's a really good play. But you know, this is the lawyer that comes in and he's like the only one that believes the boy. Nobody else would believe him. And he goes to trial for him. And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was really.
Your pitch is fine. I put you on the spot with the pitch. You're good.
Not great on paper, but it was really fun to do. But so then you know I did community theater, and then I graduated when I was 18. I went right to Northwestern in Chicago and was a theater major there. So.
And we're gonna get into it in a second, but that's kind of where Loud and Swain started, right?
Yeah. So went to Northwestern, and then when I got out here, I sort of through school, met the guys, a lot of the guys that are in the band, and
okay, cool.
Sort of met them through other school connections, but I didn't know them when I was actually in school.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah, Mike, the bass player, was in grad school there, so we didn't know each other, but then we got out here, and a mutual friend introduced us. And
you already had that, you know, you didn't know each other, but you had that history with it, at least.
Exactly.
Oh, cool,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when did you move out into the Los Angeles area?
So 93, as soon as I graduated from college, I got in the car and drove out right away.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. And you know, you get out here and there's, you know, you've got nothing. I literally everything I owned fit in my car and, I started waiting tables and
oh, it sounds very familiar. See, my path was tour guiding at WB. That was the,
oh really?
Yeah. That was the first jump in for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
So funny.
Wow.
Okay, so you're out here in 93. What do you consider, I'm sure you're acting as you're waiting tables, what do you consider to be, like, the first big break? What was the one where you're like, okay, this could work out for a little while?
I had a bunch of, like, false breaks. I was waiting tables, and I got this part in this movie that was going to shoot in Romania, called Hidden World, and it was like,
oh my.
I was a half plant, half person. It was like,
sure.
It was a right, like you do. It was a sci-fi thing, and I quit my job, and this is it. I was gonna made the big time, and literally the day before we were supposed to leave, like they lost funding, and the movie never happened.
I would have killed to have seen that.
I know. So then you know, like, I went back to work, and then you know, I got this play, and so that was kind of a big deal, but. Really, my first, like, job was I got a part on the first 90210.
MDB. I'm like, wow, this guy goes back. Okay.
Yeah, I go back. Yeah, I mean, it was a co-star role. It's a one-day part. Jason Priestley directed the episode. And, you know, but it felt like it made the big time. And I couldn't quit my job or anything. I was, by that point, I was delivering packages. I was, like, a delivery guy. And so... It literally worked in the morning, got off at like 1, and then I went back to delivering packages. So, so I had like a lot of like little guest stars, little things like that, and I did commercial work. And but really, for me, the significant break was when I got this part on Felicity.
Right, that and was, that went like a while, right? You were
my
was regular at the time, or
yeah,
was
I was
just,
a
recurring?
I was recurring. Yeah, I was recurring, but I was in like three quarters of the episodes, and that lasted for 4 years.
And obviously Felicity was a big thing, and
yeah.
I'd imagine opened a few doors for you, right?
It did. It really did. And you know, and that's where, you know, I finally got to quit my job and do this full time, and it did. It was a real game changer.
Yeah, because, I mean, from there, man, I mean, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, NYPD Blue, NCIS,
right.
I mean, these are just a few that happened, it seems, really
right.
Quickly after that.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it is, like, you know, getting work begets more work, but
mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing is, like, once you are working, you start to get just a feel for, like, how it's supposed to go, you know, and
yeah, sure.
You get more comfortable. But yeah, I mean, I think getting the thing on Birds of Prey was directly related to Felicity too. I always thought that having.
See, I was wondering about that too, because you look at a certain point, it seems, in your past, and it's like, okay, these are all WB shows. I wonder if, you know, everybody's watching everybody else's work and things pop up every once in a while.
Yeah, definitely. That had something to do with it, and that was the age I was. It fit right into what the WB then was. Audience was, and so yeah, I mean, I was sort of the nerdy guy on WB shows, you know, or whatever.
But I mean, too, like especially with we'll get into Supernatural at some point too, I'd imagine. But
yeah,
but with those shows, with Birds of Prey and Supernatural, especially, you kind of seem to be the voice of the audience guy, you know, like in Birds of Prey, you're making references to like 66 Batman, even with the Shakespeare bust in the bar there.
Yeah.
You're in love with Huntress because everyone watching the show is in love with Huntress. And
exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny, and that was, even my part on Felicity was like, I was the annoying guy down the hall who would basically tell Felicity, like, what I really thought of her. You know, a lot of, like, hardcore Felicity fans really didn't like my character because I was like, I don't buy it. I'd talk to her face like, you know, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying what you're doing. And that kind of started that whole kind of character thing. But yeah, I do. It's funny. I've a handful of roles that I've played have been that guy, and I love that. That's, you know, especially, you know, the Birds of Prey was that way, and Chuck on Supernatural was that way. I love sort of being the voice of the audience, you know.
And obviously, you know, the Chuck character has taken off a little more than the Birds of Prey character did.
Well, yeah.
Happy for you. Is that the Supernatural character? Is Chuck the one that you're most recognized for now, or is it?
Yeah, I mean,
your
it really
rating,
been,
or?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends where I am, but yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, Supernatural has this huge, huge fandom, and they've, you know, there are conventions we do, and you know, I mean, I'm certainly, I make, you know, appearances at these conventions and stuff like that, so, yeah, I'd say Supernatural. I mean, there's a whole waiting audience out there that are fans of this movie Waiting that I did, and...
Myself included.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, you can, you know, it just kind of depends, you know, where you are. Some people don't, you know, Supernatural's a funny show because a lot of people don't even know it's still on the air. But the people
that watch it love it.
You know?
But, like, you were in what was supposed to be the last episode, and then all of a sudden it keeps going.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it really is, it's remarkable what the fans of that show have done, like, really created it, made it into this thing more than just what the show is, you know, it's this whole other world online.
Sure.
And so, you know, but and Birds of Prey might have had that if we were a little more in the computer age, you know. I mean, really, we didn't
have. It was just the birth of it, too. I feel like.
Yeah, we didn't have.
I mean, like, it was the first show that got me online personally, and I feel like it was still so early. You know, you'd go around and there was only so much that you could get to.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, a lot of shows. I mean, early on, I was on a lot of shows that just didn't last very long. Threshold didn't last very long, and now you have shows that, you know, people. I mean, the fans of Supernatural have kept that show on the air. They're
it's amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if Birds of Prey had Twitter or Facebook, it might have been a different story. You know.
Instead, it's got a podcast. 10 years.
Hey,
later.
It's got. Hey, we got this. We're keeping it alive.
Absolutely. You mentioned going to conventions and whatnot. I've got to say, your Supernatural convention episode was eerily familiar to me. It reminded me of the first convention I went to in like a sad little hotel in the middle of Pennsylvania. It has that been like a life imitating art type of thing for you? Had you been going to conventions before that for a reason?
No, I had not been to a Supernatural convention before that, and personally, I hadn't been to a convention. The only thing I'd been to is more like video game conventions.
Okay.
But so I hadn't. So that was new to me. And then that show aired, and the next weekend after it aired, I went to my first convention. So it was that really was, you know, screwed with my head. Like, oh my god, this is crazy, you know.
Now it's real now.
Yeah, it's real now. So it was in Chicago, and it really felt like that scene at the beginning of that episode when I walk on stage, and I'm nervously, I have a bottle of water, and I'm all nervous.
Yep.
That's kind of what it felt like in real life, too.
Now, hopefully there's more than 20 extras in that room, though,
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's much more, it's, you know, you know, 1,000 people, and, you know, 90% women. That's the other thing. I don't know if people realize that 90% of that audience is women.
I remember that being a surprise to me the first time I went to convention, too. I'm like, it's not just dudes here, Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it gets to the point where we were even like, if there is a guy in the audience, we're like, hey, a guy.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah.
Someone else who's brave enough to come out here. Good for him.
Yeah, exactly.
So I love that this is, that you're a guy that I can put this question on the interview notes for. But
yes.
In the supernatural realm, are you God?
It's a good question. I the shorter answer is yes. It was meant to be that Chuck was supposed to be God. But the longer answer really is that Eric Kripke, the creator of the show, he mm-hmm. called me after that episode and he was like, you know, how does it feel to be God? Because I didn't know. I really didn't know. It didn't say in the script, oh, and by the way, he's God. You know, those.
Right.
But everyone was kind of interpreting it that way. And I said,
I mean,
is that
the one shirt on, for Christ's sake?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I was like, well, I guess it feels okay, you know. And he said, look, if fans ask you if you're God, just let them. I would rather them interpret it however they want to interpret it. But, you know, my, Rob Benedict, my opinion is that it's Chuck was Eric Kripke. So, I mean, it was a manifestation of Eric. And when Eric left the show, which was the end of that season,
right.
his final episode, that was his final episode. He wrote in my goodbye as sort of a, like, you know, his love letter to the show.
Oh, see, that's very cool.
Yeah, and so so in the sort of super universe of the show, you say Chuck is God because he created the show. Eric is God of Supernatural because he created it. But within the mythology of the show itself, you know, people have questions about, well, if you're God, then how come this and this and this? I can't answer all of that because it doesn't necessarily make sense.
I promise you, I won't get into that.
No, but just in the super mythology of the show, and just sort of just the show itself, if you look at it, it's just a television show. Then yes, Chuck is the God of that.
Then
you know?
Absolutely. Oh, very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
See what happens when a show runs for more than 13 episodes?
I know.
So much into it. And before we jump into Birds of Prey, I have to say, when you said you'd do this interview, I started researching you, of course, and I found Loud and Swain. Downloaded, I swear to God, I bought on iTunes the Eskimo album. It is
awesome.
Fantastic, man. There's a run of songs in that album that I just keep, like, going over the same ones over and over again with, like, Mama's Jam and She Waits and January and Gamma Ray. Like,
awesome.
I've woken up humming them. For people
great.
That haven't heard any of it, what is, like, a great, what would you say is, like, the pinnacle Loud and Swain song that you're like, if you check this out, if you dig it, go for the rest of it?
I think Eskimo off of that record is a very...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, quintessential Loud and Swain song. You know, Gamma Ray, too.
Mm-hmm.
Very quintessential Loud and Swain. I mean, you know, they're fun songs with a heart. There's lyrics that are interesting to listen to.
They seem
yeah.
like songs too that would be great in a concert setting as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. A lot of energy.
Like, yeah, ones where you guys could really let go.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and we do.
Cool.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of jumping around in the live show.
and
the album before that, there's a song, Pop Tart Heart.
Thing?
What's that?
And there's a kazoo element to your show?
Yeah, so the album before that one, A Brand New Hurt, there's a song called Medicated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's when we play it live, it's not even like that on the album, but when we play it live, there's a kazoo solo. And fans have begun bringing their own kazoos to the shows. So during the kazoo show, solo, they kazoo along with us.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So you've got even, like, the interactive element. See, that's...
Yeah, it's got an interactive element, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
And are you the main songwriter?
Yeah, well,
I'm
we,
sure
you know,
it's
we...
collaborative, but...
Yeah, it's collaborative. I mean, we, you know, the way a lot of our songs start, they'll start with just me. I've written a song with a guitar and vocals, and then I'll bring it to the guys, and we all rearrange it. And really, so the music is written by all of us, and I write
cool.
the lyrics.
Oh,
yeah.
Very nice. And as an occasional songwriter myself, I mean, when I put this together, you'll hear the sad little theme song I've made for this podcast. But,
oh, great.
What keeps you going with it? Cause, like, I wrote half a dozen songs in the past 4 years, and I write a lot, but it's just not something that ever comes to me so so freely. How do you keep going? I mean, you guys have done 4 albums now.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. Just, you know, the other guys really inspire me a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing that there are people out there that really like the music, that inspires you. You know, you start writing for people. And just, you know, I always just draw on my own, like, life experiences. And just things just keep happening that sort of just keep my interest peaked in it all, you know. And
keep translating lyrics for you. That's cool.
Yeah, so... Yeah, just it keeps coming, and you know, every time we sit down to write a new album, I'm like, oh, I wonder what's in me, you know. But you know, it's always good. It's always really inspiring. We just finished a new record. It's being mastered right now, so it'll be out in about a month.
Oh, awesome!
I'm really excited about that. Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Sky Alive.
Sky Alive, and that's out in April or end of March.
It'll be out in April. We'll have it available for pre-order starting at the beginning of March.
Oh, great.
And then, you know, it'll be on iTunes and loudandswain.com.
I was going to say, I'm sure they can... Okay, there you go, loudandswain.com.
Yeah, LoudenSwain.
Are there any live shows coming up to promote that? Or?
Well, let's see. We're going to Vegas, actually, the second week of March for... There's a Supernatural convention.
Oh,
and
cool.
They're going to play at that.
Nice.
And then we're going to have a Stage It show. I don't know if you've heard of StageIt.com,
no.
But it basically provides a place where bands can play live shows for the internet audience. So we'll play and people around the world can tune in and watch us on Stage It.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so we're going
to
have...
So they can go to, I'm guessing, loudandswain.com and Stage It to see...
Yes, and
when
Stage
that's
It.
Happening?
Yeah, and that's at the end of March. That's actually March 29th. That same day at night, the Stage show is at like 3:00, and then Stage It, and then at night, at 8:00 that night, we have a gig here in Los Angeles.
Angeles. Yeah. So all promoting the new album and stuff.
And that'll be the gig in Los Angeles on the 29th at the Dragonfly. That'll be the first time we, you know, locally will play all the songs, the new songs.
Ooh, at the Dragonfly too. Good call.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you guys have done this all without a label, am I correct? Or you started with
that? Yeah, yeah. We do it all ourselves. You know, our label is called 3-Car Records. And yeah, we do it all ourselves. I mean, again, 10 years ago, you wouldn't necessarily have been able to do that. But now, the way it is now, it's a little bit more of the norm, you know. And
sure.
And
it gives you guys a little more control of how you're presented to your fans, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And it's
very,
you know,
cool.
When the audience is there, it makes it easier, you know. But, yeah, just online, you can really, it gives you just such a platform to put out your own stuff.
Yeah, it's almost a first choice anymore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
More bands are doing it. You know, Radiohead does it that way. And
yeah, absolutely.
Know, yeah.
Well, happy to hear that there's a 5th album coming out for sure.
Yeah, yeah, we're very excited about it. Really excited about it.
Cool, cool. Okay, so this being Broken Wings, the unofficial Birds of Prey podcast.
Yes,
I think
sir.
It's time we jump into Birds of Prey, if that's okay for you.
That's fine.
So when, obviously you were out here working, like we talked about, you were on a bunch of the WB shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
When did you first hear of Birds? Like, was there buzz around town, or just a call from your agent, or...
Yeah, it was, well, let's see, the show, I think it just started,
mm-hmm.
and I got a call about, you know, about an audition, and so, yeah, I went in and auditioned for it, and I remember it was, you know, they had said it was going to be a recurring role, so
okay.
There were a lot of people there, you know, it was like one of those things, and you know, I remember it being in the room at my audition and just kind of just really having fun with it, really playing to the comedy of the character, you know. And
because you're the one that's there to get the outright laugh too.
What's that?
Your character always seemed to be the guy who's there definitely to get a laugh, you know.
Yeah. Again, and like you said, it's sort of the voice of the audience, and I really, you know, I really got that, and I loved that he was sort of like, kind of embraced the freaks, you know, that he was like,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, the King of the Geeks or whatever. Like
the point, you know, you've got the metahuman bar. One of my favorite moments of yours is when Barbara Gordon comes in, and you kind of give her a, like, it's cool that you're here look, but I'm also upset because you're not a freak like me, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah, I love that. Yeah, and it was just one of those things. I got the role, and that was that. And it's just it was.
And are, like it fun. Being a comic book, obviously related show, and Batman comics and there were Birds of Prey comics at the time. Are you kind of bummed that it's an original character, or are you excited because obviously you've got a whole new way that you could go with it?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, you know, it would always be fun to play sort of some iconic character, but yeah, I mean, I was excited to, you know, that I could take it a new way and do whatever I want. And really that's what it was in the audition, sort of like, even from just the audition, like going in and just trying anything.
Sure.
And it just so happened that what I was doing, the vision I saw for the character was kind of what they were seeing too. So,
and
yeah,
thankfully, because, I mean,
favor.
You wound up in, I mean, it's hard to say, but you wound up in, like, a third of the show. I think you become like the fourth bird, basically. You're in there all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. And in even the last episode, I remember that, you know, that was, it was, they knew they were canceled and that was kind of a bummer, but it was fun to, we were all kind of rallying together at that point, and it was fun to be there for that and be such a big part of that.
Yeah, that was a question I had, whether it was, you know, everyone's just kind of mad the whole time, or if it's like, well, if we're going out, let's go out with a bang.
Yeah, I think that was the idea, and we all knew it, too. Like, they were going to go out with a bang, they were going to destroy the set.
Yep.
You know,
which
and,
was just the defining moment of my childhood, I think, when those two came in, and then you started climbing up there, and I'm like, this is amazing. Why did they cancel this?
I know. It was crazy, and I remember, I mean, in my character loses his mind. And,
like,
you
yeah,
know,
I mean, like, when you get a script like that, where you're, I mean, I'm sorry, you're batshit crazy the whole time. Are you excited, or you're like, how am I going to
I was everything. I was excited. I remember being a little bit nervous. Like, wait, what now? You know? But yeah, so, yeah, it was everything. I remember, like, okay, how am I going to do this, you know?
Yeah. I imagine it's just scary to keep that up the whole episode. And, I mean, like, I'm sure some of it's scripted, but was any of that improv, too? I mean, you're babbling
yeah.
for a while.
Yeah, it was a lot improv. I remember they said just, you know, go for it, you know. And again, that...
Any strange reference that bumps into your head, just go.
Just go, yeah. And you know, that really was... I mean, there were things like, you know, suddenly Gibson's acting like a monkey up on the, you know, on the scaffold.
Yeah, your King Kong moment.
Right. But,
yeah, and like, you act like, I mean, Harley Quinn treats you like a puppy the entire episode, and it's kind of
yeah.
cute. Like, I would totally watch the Gibson and Harley show, you know?
Totally. I wish you could do that. And Mia Sara, I mean, she was awesome. I remember, like, you know, for me, Ferris Bueller was, like, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, the same. But, I mean, it took me, like, 3 episodes of watching the show to be like, oh, wait, that's Ferris's girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, and by that point, you know, I felt comfortable with her, and I was asking her about, you know, doing that movie. And
how cool.
Just really taken with her. She was really cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, she is also, I think, basically the only other character besides you who's actually allowed to get a laugh in the show.
Yes, yeah.
And you two just seem to have so much fun in the episode. Like, definitely
yeah.
getting also the best written of the scenes in it, too. Just, you guys
yeah.
get to be crazy and... You know, she gets to be evil, and you get to be scared of it, but it's
yeah.
so fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it really was. It was, you know, I think we were talking a lot, you know, on the set, and mm-hmm. I think that went into it. It made me feel more comfortable, too, because, you know, it's always a little bit, okay, wait, I'm basically dragged around on a leash and losing my mind, you know, and so it made me feel safe. But,
and doing it on the show that just got canceled, so that can't help either.
Exactly. But, yeah, no, that was fun. It was super fun. And, yeah, so, and again, I like the idea of, like, when he lost his mind, like, I kind of liked that idea that he was, you know, kind of short-circuiting. And, you know, and he was this guy who could feel everything, you know, and he could feel everything. And so it was just, again, just inventing it in my head, like, it was kind of a fun exercise to do.
Especially for a guy who can't forget anything, too.
Right, exactly.
Which is,
right.
I mean, yeah, Gibson Kafka. It's a pretty Kafka-esque thing, but I mean, and another reason too why you're a great conduit to the fans. I mean, like, I feel like any good fan superpower is to not forget anything.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So obviously you're in the last episode, which still remains, I think, a favorite of mine. You were in the first one you were in, I think, was the third episode. At least the third episode aired. So was there a feeling on set of excitement for the show at the time? Or were things already going downhill behind the scenes?
No. My first episode, it was still going up.
Sure.
Didn't really know, you know, it definitely had a lot. Coming in, it had a lot behind it. Like, you know, it got a lot of press. I think that WB had really high hopes of what the show could be. They wanted to be a new Buffy. So when I got on, there was still that vibe. And I remember just in creating, and the first scene I shot was the one, you know, I'm like on a ladder in the store.
Oh, your actual first scene, yeah.
Yeah, my actual first scene, right. And we took a long time just to shoot that because we wanted to just define who Gibson was and what we wanted the tone to be, what we wanted me to sound like, and that kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a new show, that's always kind of the fun part of, like, you know, you're molding it for the first time. And so, yeah, there's definitely that. There was a lot of time taken.
Okay, cool. So there was care being taken. That's good to know.
Yeah, for sure. And then is that the episode, too, where there's something on the roof? It's like a fire.
Yeah.
That
that's the one where you kind of get in the fray and go there, and the guy jumps off the roof.
Yeah. And that took a lot of time to shoot that. And so they're very meticulous there at the beginning.
Now, does that fall away by the time that we're crashing through the clock tower? Or?
Yeah, that was falling away. That was falling away by then. I mean, by then, you know, literally actors are looking for their next job.
Sure.
You know, and everybody's sort of, you know, kind of moving on. But we went out with a bang, and it was, you know, fun to shoot. That last segment was still fun to do.
No, absolutely. Now you've been on, obviously, a bunch of successful shows, and like you said, Threshold, some not so much, unfortunately. When did the vibe change for Birds? Do you remember at the time coming back for an episode and going like, oh, something's not right here?
Yeah, it was towards the end. I mean,
and again, I'm sorry for making you think back like 11 years.
Oh no, it's okay. Yeah, it's, you know, you being recurring. You know, you come in, you're like, you can always sense. Okay, well, things are going well, or things are going not so well. You know, because you've been gone a couple episodes, and you come back, you're like, oh, okay, what's going on? So, if I did four episodes, like, so maybe the third episode. That's the one where the mother.
I think that's. Yeah, I guess so.
Sins of the Mother.
Yes, with Lori Loughlin.
Yes, yeah. Right around then, I could sense maybe some trouble. but again, no one was phoning it in. I mean, I remember.
Oh no, I would never accuse actually anybody on the show. Even, you know, like you said, go out with a bang. They kept it all.
Yeah, right, and I remember. Yeah, I remember Loughlin was awesome, and really, you know, everyone sort of, you know, did their best, and, you know, at all times. I think Pray for the Hunter was really the one that, you know, I came in and it was like, oh, okay, we're going out, you know, but people were still working hard, and, I mean, like on Threshold even, we did 13 episodes, but they only aired 9, and I think by the time we were shooting the 13th, I think it was already gone, not even on the air.
Oh, wow.
So by that time, like, you know, we're doing the best we can, but it's hard to be motivated.
Absolutely.
But I didn't feel that way for this last episode. It was because what we were doing was pretty challenging and physically challenging. You know, you had to sort of show up for it. So it almost felt more like a play, you know. It felt like a play.
Why do you say that?
Well, because it's like, when you're doing a TV show and it's on the air and it keeps going and, you know, you're working hard and then once it's done, you're looking at the next script and you're thinking, what's next? And this, by this time, you know, it's canceled.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's done. And so it's like we're putting on a big show that
just for one audience.
It's for one audience, and that's the end of your song, and you take your bow and leave. So it's something more like that.
I never would have thought of it like that, but
yeah.
So well put. When did you hear about the cancellation? Were you around on set, or did you come back in knowing, like, okay, this isn't going to last much longer?
I feel like I knew before I went in to do the last episode. I knew it was over, and that was it, and that was their final episode, and that was how they were going to do it. I can't remember where, if it's like they told me, or I'm sure that, like, my manager told me, or, like, we knew it was, you know, people know, you know, it was common knowledge.
And I remember, too, at the time, like, on the internet, you couldn't go through one article without hearing, like, a cancellation fear, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and still, you know. But, so, yeah, so I knew, and I knew that was going to be the last script. You know, again, when you're recurring, it's almost like you don't have, it's not like it's, you know, it's always a kind of a bonus thing. You go in, you're doing a new episode, and that's fun to do. So it's still kind of excited to go in, as opposed to when you're a regular on a show and it gets canceled, it's kind of a knife in the heart, you know.
You're sure.
Like, oh, you know, this is my baby, and now it's, you know, but, like, for me as a recurring character, I was like, oh, cool, I love that I get to go back in and sprinkle
it. This is going to end, but at least I get to be there for the ending.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Very cool. And we've talked about the final fight a little bit, but it was just such a moment for me watching it of, like, this is what this show could be. I mean, you said less time was taken at that, but how long did that take to shoot?
So it wasn't that we took less time with it at the end. It's that they weren't quite as meticulous with things like character choices at the end as they were at the beginning. But that took a lot of time to shoot that whole thing. I want to say, like, it was a long day and night. We ended really late that night.
Oh, wow.
Shooting, yeah, the whole clock tower stuff. Because there were a lot of effects and things going on. And there were a lot of angles to get, too, you know.
And I imagine you only get one shot of that glass breaking.
Totally, totally.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So that was big, big deal. And, yeah, and I remember, like, she shoot kind of a master shot, and I remember being up there doing my, like, King Kong thing, but, like, not not being my shot yet, but I still had to kind of do it off camera.
That was a question, too, because I rewatched it before our interview the other day, and I'm like, he's still back there. Like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm, like, there the whole time.
Holding
the
stupid Batgirl doll and waving it around.
Exactly. Oh, my God. And, yeah, so... then they didn't get to my close-up until later, and I was like, okay, it's the King Kong shot, you know. So, yeah, no, it was a long day. But
very cool.
Yeah.
And I really don't want to keep you too long, because you've been so great with your time.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you doing this, Matt. I really do. And
my pleasure.
Hopefully much yet. Many more podcasts to come, but this is a highlight so far.
Man. Oh, cool, cool.
Any final thoughts on the show? Something I forgot to ask, were you a comic book fan to begin with, or?
You know, I was a comic book fan, but I knew all the basics, you know. I didn't know, like, even this, I didn't know a lot about Birds of Prey, but, you know, I was like Batman and, you know, Superman, really, honestly, just the basics. And then, you know, really later in life, and after I did this, I've gotten more into it. I actually wrote a movie, a short called The Sidekick, that's basically about a superhero sidekick who's loses his job. It's basically like Robin at 40, and he's got no real superpowers himself, and his boss fires him because he's just not cutting it anymore, and what is he supposed to do with his life? He can't, he has no powers.
What a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, it's called The Sidekick. It's going to be released pretty soon. It's a 30-minute movie, and we've got great people. Ron Livingston plays my superhero boss, and... Lizzie Kaplan and all these great, great people are in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Where is that? Is that going to be online, or how are
you
guys doing
that? It just got, we just got a distributor, and it'll be online. I'm not sure, like, where yet, but, like, you know, iTunes, Netflix, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And Yeah, and if people want to find out more about it, the sidekickproject.com has, you know, a trailer and all the information. We basically just spent a year playing festivals.
So, oh, yeah. Very excited to see this.
Yeah. It's right up your alley. So, like, really, before I did that, I got even more sort of into comic books and really sidekicks and, you know, the history of the sidekick.
The sidekicks, the redheaded stepchildren of comic
books. Yes, exactly. but, yeah, you know, in terms of other thoughts about this, like, I run into Ashley Scott every once in a while. I haven't in a long time, though. But,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I think about this show as like a really cool little moment. It was, you know, it didn't last very long, but it was like a moment where I spent a lot of time with these people, and, you know, it was fun. I'm always like appreciative of people even knowing it, you know, and
yeah.
You know, occasionally at these supernatural conventions, someone will come up with a Birds of Prey DVD, and I'm always like, wow, really? And, you know, other people don't even know, like, what was that?
Other people bought those? That's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm always wishing, you know, hoping to run into other people that, you know, I worked with on the show, like Mia,
mm-hmm.
Dina, I haven't seen in years. So, yeah, I think about them. But so I'm happy you're doing this. Happy you're keeping it alive.
Oh, got it. It's a beautiful little gem of the Batman universe that just gets, you know, it just came and went too quickly. But
yeah.
I think it's worth remembering. And very, very satisfying to hear that you do too. So thanks very much, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So there you go, New Gotham. My interview with Rob Patrick Benedict. Not only a guy who is in the thick of it, there acting, but a guy who still has love for the show all these years later. Cannot thank Rob enough for taking the time out of his day to talk with me. Even though it was over the phone and we had connection problems and whatnot, he was a trooper. He was a great sport about it. Glad we got to talk about so much of the stuff he's working on, but of course, especially his work on Birds. Just talking to him about the Siege and the Clock Tower was so cool. Also, please be sure to check out links to all of his upcoming projects. LavinSwain.com, the online concert coming up, the Sidekicks coming out really soon. They've been doing a big social media push for that. So please check it all out. You can find it in the links section at BrokenWingsPodcast.com. But that'll about do it for the show today. Again, please like us on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, find us on the site. You can always find me at Birds of Prey Online. I'm Hawk with an E there. But like the show, leave comments. Also, let me know who you want to hear an interview with next. Obviously, I can't promise anything, but I'm doing my best to try to get as many people involved with Birds of Prey as possible. So let me know who you want to hear on the show next. So thanks again very much for listening. A special thanks again to Rob for sitting down and taking the time to talk with me. Look forward to episode 4 very soon. And remember, whether you're crashing through the clock tower or just tending bar over at No Man's Land, the Oracle is watching.